has the full responsibility for the society which he is creating. And the child has the responsibility of becoming a worthy and useful member of the society of human maturity. All these things are part of provable science. Put the scientist with his equipment into the public school system and see if he can come out with any proof that materialism is of any benefit to anybody. If he can prove conclusively that the materialistic theories are not responsible for crime, narcotic addiction, and other deplorable situations, then maybe the idealist could stand corrected. But he'll never find it. He will realize that his indifference to the most important thing in the world and his downgrading of the one great reality, which is the basis of survival, will gradually bring his generation into the same poverty as those who have gone before. So we have now an ethics to consider. Now, an ethics is regarded as a moral code, a kind of creed, a commonly accepted level of conduct which is constructive and productive of growth without destruction and death. The main purpose of ethics, then, is to supply the idealism necessary to the constructive way of life. Ethics deals with every relationship of life. Without ethics, the family can't last. The nation can't last. The business organization can't last. The professions are disrupted. Everywhere where we today condemn corruption, we find at the root of it the failure of ethics. There is failure on the part of principles to govern the conduct of individuals. It is terrible to think that we who have been here as a species for a long time, from the days of the Cro-Magnon or the Pithecanthropus erectus, that we have not been able, in all that length of time, to create for humanity a system of culture by which it can survive. Why must we now face the mistakes of those who came before us by 100,000 or 200,000 years? There is no improvement. We've only improved the means of destroying. We've only advanced the skill of corruption. We have only added to the techniques of warfare. But we have never found peace. And they say, some of the scientists say now, that this proves beyond question that there is no ethics, that there is no such a thing as morality. Well, this is a rather hollow statement for the simple fact that you can't judge a thing you've never done. You can't pass judgment on a way of life you have never permitted to exist. And if scientists were as busy working with these moral problems as they are in developing atomic and nuclear weaponry, we might be nearer to the way of salvation. We do need desperately to realize that the survival of the human being is now the great scientific problem. That science cannot solve it without religion. And religion and science working together can produce a philosophy of life that will bring us through to the next century. But why is it necessary for us to go through all of this when we have histories, we have records, we have fairly accurate accounts of the mistakes that we have made in the past, and these are identical with the mistakes we are making now? We haven't even gained enough to make a new and unusual mistake. We have bigger ones, but they're the same ones. We used to use a flat stone or a stick to hit a man we didn't like. Now we throw an atomic bomb at him, but the principle is the same. We have never got over competitiveness. In religion, we have never gotten over sectarian intolerance. We have never in society gotten through the barrier that has been raised by classes and races. All these things continue to plague us while we go happily or unhappily on our way conquering the cosmos. It's about time to get down to do something here worth doing. And we have all that is necessary to do it with. We have the textbook of 5,000 years of doing it wrong. We also have a few occasional references to individuals who sincerely tried to do it right. And we see that in spite of all of the mistakes that have occurred, that the great names that we worship regard, recognize, and respect are the ones who had the great ethics and not the ones who had the big laboratories. Most of the morals of mankind were established before we had a laboratory, before we had a school. They were established the territorial rights of animals. Everywhere there are laws governing conduct. Man feels that he has now reached the point where he can break these laws with impunity. This is his big mistake. And for this mistake, he is paying a terrible price. But looking over the situation, we see how easy it is to build a strong, irrefutable statement of what it could be and how we can get to some of the things that we need. We need the leadership of the two great institutions that we have at this time. The average individual does not feel capable of overturning a system that has preyed upon him, exploited him, and terrorized him for thousands of years. Therefore, he is needing desperately the cooperation of science and the cooperation of religion. And in order to have this cooperation, they must cooperate with each other. There is no such a thing as a science that does not have its foundation in some spiritual mystery, which is unsolvable by mechanical or physical means. And there is no such a thing as a religion that does not need the scientific strength of morality and ethics. These things are part of a great pattern. But these two, science and religion, are the two great working forces. And the combining of them through a series of very astute and carefully prepared doctrines, teachings, and examples may be considered to be the great philosophy of life for the living, for those living in our present world. We have to find an answer, not just to curb a bomb or to pass a law that you can't use one that's more than 10 times as strong as it is now. We cannot do it by passing laws against various tariffs, penalizing classes, or trying to get rid of dictators who rise as rapidly as they can fall down. We have got to get back to principles in a world concept of what is necessary. And what is necessary is the recognition that the great text that we all must use is the text of experience. What the world has been through tells us what the world has done and what the world must do to get over it. It is no longer a case of someone rising up with a new idea. New ideas are very rare, because most of what we call new are ones that were aborted early in their existence by selfishness. There are somewhere records of everything we need, and much of it is available in the simple history of nations. We find in various histories, various accounts, and even in the old family encyclopedia, plenty of evidence to prove the absolute necessity of idealism as a way of life. That this idealism also represents a faith in something greater than us, and also, by idealism, the faith that we can be greater than we are. That we can be greater in the true sense of the word. That we can come near to that which is necessary for the restoration of society. When we come to these realizations, we will be in a much safer condition than we are now. And science can do it. Anyone that can invent a computer can invent a use for it that it does more than simply to take the place of the bookkeeping. We create one discovery after another, but before we hardly have the discovery, we have locked it in the pattern of our own selfishness. Whatever we devise must be exploited, must be patented, the patents must be assailed, and there must be lawsuits, and in the end, it will be these discoveries will be used to further the very difficulties they were intended to relieve. It is all because there is no vital code of ethics. There is no realization of what is necessary. To go back to China for a moment, in the family, it was their law of life that each member of the family had its own place in the plan of things. Each one had its own duties, its own responsibilities. It was necessary that each one should recognize the hierarchy of family descent, that each one should be always in a certain mood. Now, as you know, the Chinese were kind of difficult people, some of them. They weren't all easy, And to be a good Chinese family's older son was quite a trick. There's a lot of things had to happen before this could be accomplished. And one of the things that had to happen was patience and acceptance of responsibility. A Chinese son was not permitted to have arguments and fights and knockdowns with his family. He was not permitted to be uncivil, regardless of his condition. He could not be violent. He could not do anything but prove to all concerned that he was greater in his contribution of integrity to anything that could be turned against him. He had to be right in terms of the great ethics, the ethics of heaven, that the gods must lead and humanity must follow. But when mankind tries to lead and make the gods follow, there's trouble. Because there's no way of doing that without destroying the integrities of life. We are therefore now facing another problem in the situation of ethics, which will require considerable adjustment in the next few years. We're talking about ethics in the 21st century. We are looking for new ways of developing the realities of life. Well, if we want to borrow a little something from Mencius, or for an idea or two from Buddha, or perhaps something from Akhenaten, to help us find out what we ought to do in order to meet this new century, then we would be undoubtedly told very definitely that we would be required and expected to rectify our own character. We would have to become better people because we would have to deserve a better world. And while we join happily with all the world breakers, no, they will not gain the end we want. We have to rectify personal conduct. We have to make certain that in our own lives we are keeping the rules of universal ethics. And universal ethics is basically honesty. It is mental honesty, physical honesty, emotional honesty. It is also the acceptance within ourselves of the responsibility of setting the right example at all times. To discuss any subject that we do not fulfill in conduct is a waste of time. To tell people to behave themselves and then misbehave ourselves is a total loss. The individual must become a self-controlling, self-directing instrument of policy and purpose. Each of us, in a way or another, is maintaining or tearing down the social systems to which we belong. We are becoming helpful or helpless. We are adding or subtracting. And at the present time, we have created a tremendous interval. On the one hand, those who have, and those on the other hand, who have not. And the very wars and commotions and revolutions and rebellions that are troubling us at the present time, with many, many individuals fleeing for refuge to some other country, we find more progressive countries heavily burdened with those attempting to escape tyranny. Now all this is part of a family feud. The planet is one family. Nations are merely parts of a vast family. And when problems arise in one part of a family, it is necessary for all parts to cooperate for a solution. Now unfortunately, in many cases, we are not cooperating for a solution. We are exploiting the animosities of other nations in order to create better markets and do various things that seem to be expeditious at the moment. Nothing that is contrary to ethics is best for the moment or any other time. And as we watch, we find that the compromises of principle resulting from the emergencies of the moment are simply adding to the trouble and making the collapse more immediate. We have to start in somewhere to do the very best that we can. And therefore, there should be educational material available in the public school. The public school is the source of the young people who are going to have to take over this world in the early years of the next century. These young people should not go out with nothing but the ignorance which we now use as the standard of graduation. They should not go out without integrities and without idealism. Now, we are told, of course, that it is not right to teach religion in the public school. I think this is a mistake. It's not the religion we're worrying about. It's theology. Theologies conflict. Religion does not. There is probably not one person in 100 who is considered seriously religious, whose basic principles differ from those of others equally religious. The Buddhist has the same code as the Christian. The Jew works use with the same Old Testament as the Christian. The Brahmin and the Hindu has the same code of integrities. They have the same consideration for the young. They have the same honor for virtues. We find it in Japan, in Buddhism, and in Shinto. We find in Shinto, for example, what we regard as an exaggerated respect for the country. We feel that the Shintoists, about 60 or 70 million of them, are really going to get very, very foolish because their philosophy means that their religion is based upon the protection and security of the nation, not a personal condition. The Shintoist believes that he is part of a system which protects the world in which he lives. Well, it seems about that might not be a bad little note to add to our problem, that we are here not only do we do become religious for our own sake, but to add something to the positive recognition of our responsibilities of citizenship and our responsibilities of family and friendship. That a good friend is an honor to a nation. An enemy is an enemy to the state, even though it be limited to someone we don't like. All the negative things danger the whole. The good things advance the whole. Then we find other religions in different places, whether it's the American Indian with his simple creed, or the South African with his, or whatever it may be. Almost all religions have the same message. They have the same message: be honest, be kind, pay your bills, respect the rights of others, worship God, take care of your children, and refrain from avarice, selfishness, and moral corruption. Now, these types of things are not just the beliefs of the people. They are the foundations of an enduring culture. We have tried doing without them, and we're in this most serious trouble. And the only ones in our communities who are not in that trouble are those who have kept these principles or have come to know them and honor them. So we have to really get down to a world ethics, certainly to a national ethics. This should be taught in the public school. It should apply to the election of officials to government. It should be taken by all of the professions, the law profession, the medical profession, all the great systems of specialized learning that we have, should be bound together by one tremendous moral truth, ethics, namely that no one in any of those professions shall abuse power, shall abuse wealth, shall overcharge for his services, or participate in any corruption or compromise of the ideals of peace and brotherhood. These facts can be proven, and we can prove that these things do work. And, of course, in Christianity, which we are especially honoring today, we realize how definitely a dedication of a handful of dedicated and devout persons has resulted in the largest religion the world has ever known, a religion which has now become an amazing mass of sects and creeds. The point now is to bring them together, to say that ethics means that we shall honor all who seek the same truths that we seek, desire to accomplish the same ends that we desire, and have realizing conclusively that the morality of the Sermon on the Mount is not a reality or a problem for a single creed, but is essential to devotion to all religions of mankind. We can get over creedalism if we go beyond theology and enter into the principles of nature. Ethics coming through science could prove to us that the Ten Commandments are correct scientifically, biologically, historically, politically, and culturally. These are all principles which have proven and stood the test of ages. They are continuing to lead us in the way that we should go if we will obey them. But if we do not obey them, then we have no ethics. We have no ethics where exploitation comes in. We have no ethics where principles are compromised. And no ethics where nations cannot arbitrate their differences. And that we should live now, 5,000 years after the rise of nations, without having a better answer and a better solution, proves conclusively that learning as we know it has not been aimed at solution. Learning has become an instrument of exploitation. It has become a way of getting rich and not a way of getting good. Today we graduate the physician so that he goes into a highly expensive profession. What he really needs is to restate in his own consciousness the Hippocratic oath that he is a servant of the God of health, not the God of wealth. This point is the same in all professions. Ethics, therefore, is honesty. It is nothing more or less than doing what we know to be right in the first place and gradually learning to overcome the tendency in ourselves to yield to temptations. If we keep as we are, there will be no medicine because we cannot maintain it. When we cannot maintain a system in which exploitation becomes so general that no one can afford to live in it, this means revolution. Then we start all over again, fighting it out, slugging it out, and keep on going until humanity wakes to the simple fact that we are here to learn something, and the longer we take to learn it, the more we're going to suffer. And it's getting to the point now where the suffering is beginning to pinch more people. It's beginning to be available as an incentive to change things. We are now having a great revival of recognition of religious value. We've managed gradually to recognize that there is an ethic that is not man-made, but must be man-administered. We are not creating the ethics. The world is manifesting them. But they are just as real as the sunshine and the moon. They are something that was there from ever, forever and will be forever because none of the machinery of existence can work without them. We have, therefore, about time to wake up to the fact that if we love our country, if we love our children, love our families, and look for the common good, that it is time for us to begin to practice the ethics which is based upon the experience of ages. The ethics that has come to us because it was necessary. We were intended in the beginning to be kind to each other. When kindness failed, we lost ground. And with the failure of kindness, corruption gets stronger. When the failing of tolerance, intolerance increases. With the failure of the love of brotherhood, war increases. The failures of values result in the rise of corruptions. They're all based upon failing to nurture and protect the better things that are within ourselves. So the time has come very definitely to think about it. And we might ask some of our big scientists sometime to make a good graph of what it would be like if we could see the scientific development of integrity, the scientific value of ethics, and how we can prove beyond any reasonable doubt that we cannot achieve civilization without a principle or a code that justifies existence. We have over 150 nations now. Most of them in trouble, nearly all of them struggling for existence against what seemed to be insurmountable obstacles. 24 hours of world honesty would cure most of it. It would give it a little breather, and people would see what it was like if instead of fighting over their differences, they united over their common needs and responsibilities. We have built a competitive system in a world in which ethics alone can succeed. We cannot compete and survive. Cooperation and not competition is the life of trade. Everywhere, the more we give, the more we can have. Everywhere, the more we chisel, the less we will have. Everything can be scientifically proven. We can prove every ethics and every morality of importance in the history of the world, that these things were the truth and competition was a lie. That we are a materialistic civilization is an untruth. We are actually the visible manifestation of a divine program. We are here because of the integrities of a universal law much greater than ourselves. If we destroy the world on which we live, it will not be the vengeance of God, but the corruption of mortals. If we want to preserve this to a better way, then we must preserve it by our own integrities. We created the world because the deities found it necessary to give us this environment. We have continued in this world hoping and suffering and doubting because of our own abuses of something essentially good, proper, and generous in the beginning. We now must take the world that we have torn apart and put it together again. And if we haven't the courage and the wisdom and the insight to do this, we will not have a better generation to come. Ethics means the victory of kindness over cruelty, of love over hate, of good over evil, and of the immortal principles of faith over the mortal principles of corruption. We are a divine creation, and when we became the prodigal son, I wasted our provinces and properties and in riotous living, we destroyed the purpose for which we were created. This purpose must be revived and restored. We cannot do it unless learned professions join in helping us to make this possible. We got to give it a start. If we could get 10 years of it well established in our public school system, we would be much safer when we go into the next generation. But to go into the future with a generation of young people who have nothing on their minds but rock music and television programs, who have nothing more to live for than the competition of sports, who have nothing to hope for but profit in some investment or some scallywag enterprise, or who will sacrifice their health and their lives maybe for narcotics. We will have continued suicide of the young as long as we give them nothing to live for. And we give them nothing to live for when we take their ideals away from them and tell them to go out and try to find in rock music or in the back alleys a noble purpose for life. Life is sacred. Life is purpose. And it is up to those who are in authority to make sure that this is known, that we are not wasting bodies, we are wasting lives. We are not wasting a few physical energies, but we are wasting the talents that come through at birth to all who come into this world. We are now being born crippled by a background that has no place in it for the integrities. And we have to correct this. The child coming into this life is entitled to a healthy body, but he cannot have that if its parents are on narcotics. The child coming in is entitled to a good education, but it cannot have that when every ideal is cut out of the classroom. The child coming in is entitled to a good job, one suitable to his attainments and made possible by moderation in all things. If he cannot have a decent job, cannot live on the level of integrity, he is bound to get into trouble. The great wealth at one end and the great poverty of the other are monuments to ignorance, monuments to corruption, and complete failures in religion and ethics. That they were allowed to endure is simply because they cater to the weaknesses of human nature, and we have not been given the incentives to strengthen our inner resources. We have within ourselves the power to be anything that we really want to be, but we have not been given the inspiration to want to be anything. Therefore, as the waiting, hopefully, for the resurrection of the world, and the symbol of the resurrection is now this Easter Sunday. And on this Sunday, we hope that a spirit of resurrection will touch the affairs of mortals so that we will begin to bring our deeds into the mean of our needs, that we will continue to grow as we were intended to grow, and in the due course of time, fulfill the noble destiny for which we were created. All these things must come, and today we need an ethics, and science can give us absolute proof that our mistakes cannot succeed, that our troubles will only end when we stop causing them. And with this in mind, I think we have something to build towards another Easter with greater hope. Thank you.